Are you ready to lose weight? With Effecty, getting access to powerful GLP-1 weight loss medications has never been easier or more affordable. Effecty offers compounded semaglutide, the same active ingredients as the popular name brands, but for up to 80% less. These medications work by regulating appetite and blood sugar, helping you lose weight in a sustainable, science-backed way. Getting started is so simple. Just fill out a short medical questionnaire, then connect with a licensed provider through a quick chat-based telehealth consultation. If you're eligible, your prescription gets shipped straight to your door. No hassle, no waiting rooms. With transparent pricing, no hidden fees, and no membership required, Effecty is committed to making proven weight loss treatments accessible to everyone. Effecty gave me the opportunity to try their service out, and I have to say, it is just as easy as they say it is. I filled out the questionnaire, and within days, a package arrived at my door filled with everything I needed and detailed instructions. Their website also tells you everything you need to know, and you can always chat with your healthcare provider. It really is that simple and convenient. So if you're ready to level up your weight loss game, my listeners can now get $50 off of GLP-1 weight loss treatments at Effecty.com with code ATTWG at checkout. That's Effecty.com, EFFECTY.com, and use the code ATTWG to get $50 off your first month of GLP-1 weight loss treatment. No hassles, no memberships, and no hidden fees. So get started today. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you can build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet. And the styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. So I've been using Armoire, and I'm actually wearing one of their shirts right now as I'm recording this, and it's a great idea. You don't have to commit to buying the clothes, but you can really start to explore your own personal style. Like if there's a trend or something that you've been wanting to maybe try but not commit to, this is absolutely perfect. Because if you don't like it, you just put it back in the bag and get something else. Because we've all been there. You open your closet, and even though it's packed, you feel like you have nothing to wear. And with Armoire, that's a thing of the past. They make it effortless for all women to turn heads with stylish everyday looks. You can rent high-quality designer clothing for any occasion, and it's all tailored to your personal style. Plus, you don't have to do laundry, and you don't have to go shopping. It truly could not be any easier. And right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month, which is up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/ATTWG. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/ATTWG to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today. With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom? Let me tell you about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you wish to ask. And then she can either type a response or use their voice-to-text feature, and MyLifeInABook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and stories for eternity. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy. It's something that you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. And this is something that Ethan and I had been thinking about doing with our parents. We have this podcasting equipment, so we wanted to find a way for them to tell their story. But I love this because it's so regimented. They send them a question every week, and it just makes it really easy and turnkey. And it just seems like a great way for us to get our parents' stories down so that our children and our children's children can have them. So if you're interested, check out mylifeinabook.com and use code ATTWG at checkout for 15% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's mylifeinabook.com and use code ATTWG for 15% off today.
I'm Paige, the host of Reverie True Crime. I tell stories of helpless victims, vicious killers, predators watching their prey before they strike, survivors, petty crimes, people we think we know who do the unthinkable, and the dangers that lurk not only in the dead of night, but in plain sight in the light of day. Every once in a while, I'll also tell stories of the frightening paranormal, elusive cryptids, haunted locations, and conspiracies that may be silly or thought-provoking. You can listen to Reverie True Crime wherever you're listening to this podcast.
On July 27th, 2021, 5-year-old Michael Vaughn was sitting in his living room in Fruitland, Idaho, playing video games. His father left him there to go check on Michael's younger sister and order a pizza. He was gone for maybe 15 or 20 minutes, but when he came back, his little boy was gone. Now, 4 months later, Michael, Monkey Vaughn, is still missing, and his parents are begging for police and the public not to let his case go cold. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell the stories of those who never came home. I want to tell you the story of Michael Vaughn. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Everyone,
welcome back.
Surprise.
I guess we're not taking a hiatus.
Yeah, I didn't tell Ethan about this either. Those of you who are regular listeners know that we are actually on a break. We are on a break and for the month of December. Why?
I'm supposed to be the one saying we were on a break.
I know, you should have appreciated that more. But I couldn't stay away. So this case is one that I've been following basically since the beginning, but I hadn't planned on doing an episode on it simply because it was so recent and there isn't a ton of public information out there, as is the case with, you know, generally with very recent cases. But Brandy Neal, who is Michael's mother, recently gave an interview to the Idaho Press where she basically just begged for more people to pay attention to her son's case. Like, they are really making a push for publicity right now. So I figured that, you know, we got to do it. Like, as much as we can help, you know, even with our audience, like, you know, we're not as big as some of the other major players in this space, but it was a good opportunity to just get his story out there, do what we can, and just do a little bonus mini-sode in between seasons.
Well, I mean, that is the point of the podcast, is getting more publicity out for missing persons. So
yeah,
I mean,
exactly. And when she's like literally said, like, people, please, like, do this case, like, please cover him. Like, I, you know, come on. You have to.
Also, his nickname is Monkey.
Yeah.
That's what we call Miller.
I know. And they look a lot alike, and he's almost exactly a year older than Miller. It's yeah, that's like part of the reason also I was kind of staying away from this a little bit, was just because it was very close to home.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's tough. But all right, so before we get started, we do have a few announcements to make since, you know, we haven't spoken to you all in a little bit. We finally have a merch store, which is exciting.
We still don't have any of our own merch.
Don't worry about it. It also doesn't have a good URL yet, but I put the link in the show notes so you can go and click on it there and check it out. We are also proud to announce that we are now members of the Darkcast Podcast Network.
Yay.
Yeah. We're joining other indie podcasts, including Reverie True Crime, The Jury Room, Brew Crime Podcast, and more. So that's very exciting. For you guys, like, not much is going to change, except we'll sometimes be playing promos for other shows, but like, that's just a good way to discover new shows to listen to.
Yeah. And also, you know, our podcast will be played on other.
Yeah.
As a what?
A promo.
I'm not even going to say it. Include it. Don't even edit that.
Oh, no. I'll leave that in. I'll definitely leave that in. I'd also like to take a moment to thank our newest Patreon members. You're the absolute best. So thank you to Sarah O, Matt S, Adriana V, and Kvetta B. If you'd like to join us, you can do so over at patreon.com/attwgpod. And just as a heads up, starting in January, we will have a few ads on the podcast here or there. Ethan's looking at me because I haven't told him this either, but it's fine. Patreon members, though, will be able to get the episodes early, which they already do, but also ad-free.
Wait, does this mean we have sponsors?
Yeah, we've got a few ads coming up in January. Like, don't get too excited, but it's going to be good. It's going to be good.
Neat.
But enough about us, because who cares? Let's get to Michael Vaughn. Michael Joseph Vaughn was born on June 26, 2016, to Brandy Neal and Tyler Vaughn. Michael is one of four children. He has an older brother and sister, as well as a younger sister. The family lives in Fruitland, Idaho, which is a small town in southwest Idaho. It's about 50 miles from Boise, and Fruitland actually borders Oregon. As of the 2010 census, there are fewer than 5,000 people living in this town. And from what I understand, that number has not grown significantly in the past decade.
So does that mean there's like one stoplight, a McDonald's on one end of the town, and a Sheetz on the other?
I would assume so. Or I don't know. Wawa. Maybe it's Wawa. I don't know what they have. Yeah. Or a come and go. I don't know like what's out in Idaho.
What's a come and go?
You know, that's like, it's the same thing. It's like a Sheetz, a Wawa, a come and go.
I have never heard of a come and go.
Yeah, like a Circle K. Like those are all they're the same basic idea, just regionally different.
Okay.
So I don't know what they have, but yeah, probably something like that. So it really does seem to be like that quintessential small town in the Midwest, you know, that you would see on movies and TV shows. It's the type of place where kids still play outside and everyone knows each other. And that is important to know in terms of the circumstances surrounding Michael's disappearance, because this is also a rural area. Michael and his family, like, they live in a subdivision, but it's surrounded by farmland. As I mentioned, and as you keyed in on, Michael does go by the nickname Monkey in his family, which, you know, is what we call our youngest son, Miller. And, you know, in addition to that and being around the same age, they both have the same interests that all boys seem to have at that age. So they're both into monster trucks, superheroes, cars, and just being like completely insane. His mother describes him as a sweet and energetic boy and says that his laugh is absolutely infectious. It seems as though Michael and his family had a pretty normal life. They went camping, and Brandy's Facebook is filled with photos and videos of her kids just playing in the backyard, eating ice cream, just, you know, typical things that you post on Facebook. And there was nothing really special about July 27th, 2021 either. Brandy had to work that day, and she told the Idaho Press that Michael actually asked her not to go, which isn't something that he usually did. But, you know, she had to. It was a work day. So that evening, as I mentioned, Michael was in the living room playing video games. Now, I'm not sure where his older siblings were or his grandfather, who I think also lives with them. Police haven't really divulged a lot of the actual circumstances around Michael's disappearance, which, so when you go into all the online forums, like, there's a lot of frustration around that.
But it's way too early in the case.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, at this point, it's still very, very active, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely.
This is not a, they're not at the point where they're seeking public assistance.
Yeah, not really, no. Yeah. And so, and yeah, they are keeping a lot of things close to the vest. So we don't know, you know, like the minute by minute timeline leading up to Michael disappearing. So I'm just kind of piecing this together based on, you know, different sources. But I do know that at the very least, Michael, his father Tyler, and his baby sister Aria were home. According to Tyler, between 6:30 and 7 p.m., he went to go check on Aria and order a pizza. When he returned to the living room 15 to 20 minutes later, Michael was gone. Tyler immediately called Brandy at work and said that he couldn't find Michael. So, I mean, I shouldn't say immediately. It's not like he walked into the living room, didn't see Michael, and then picked up the phone. Like, he looked for him.
Right. He looked around the house. He looked in
like
the backyard.
Like, he wasn't, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, when it was clear that he wasn't just in another room or in the backyard or whatever, like, Tyler called Brandy. So Brandy realized it was serious. She actually left work. She came home. But by the time she got to their house, neighbors were out searching and the police had already arrived. Now, it's getting late at this point, but it's the middle of summer, so it's not dark yet.
Right.
Brandy says that she ran around the neighborhood, you know, knocking on every door, asking if anybody had seen her son. And it turns out that some people had. The Idaho Press article says that neighbors did witness Michael knocking on doors right before his disappearance.
He was outside knocking on doors?
He was outside, yeah. Now, this does kind of seem a little weird, considering that when Michael was last seen, he was wearing a blue Minecraft t-shirt and boxer briefs. So, like, he wasn't dressed to go outside and play. Like, he was dressed to be in his living room playing video games, which is what he was doing.
Right.
So my first thought when I hear about a kid in his underwear knocking on doors is that he's in distress. But there were some Facebook comments that indicate that that wasn't the case. One neighbor whose door he knocked on said that he just came out and asked if, like, her child could come out and play. I couldn't gather whether or not the kid wasn't there or if the neighbor just told Michael, like, yeah, but go ask your parents first. But either way, like, Michael left and she watched him walk back to his house because she was apparently only a few doors down or around the corner or something like that. And she saw him and she watched him until he got to his front yard. And then she went back inside. Then another neighbor saw him after that, running down the block, but that neighbor didn't think it was weird because Michael was heading toward, like, where some other kids were playing. And so he just assumed, you know, he's running over to go play with those kids. And, you know, this is just the kind of neighborhood where, like, you did that. Like, you would see kids running around to go join other kids. That was not a weird thing that would necessarily stick out in anybody's mind. Now, again, this is all based on Facebook comments, not law enforcement statements.
Sure.
But when Michael wasn't found in the immediate area, the entire neighborhood started searching for him. The police even brought canines in immediately. According to Brandy, the dogs caught Michael's scent and tracked it to the end of their street, away from the farm field to the right of the house, but then stopped abruptly. Now, canines certainly aren't infallible. This isn't, like, you know, a science necessarily. But an abrupt stop like that is not really what you want to see in a situation like this.
No, it leads me to believe vehicle abduction.
Right. Yeah.
But as we have discussed on previous episodes, if that were the case, then we're talking about somebody that's been stalking the neighborhood, not necessarily the child.
Now, this investigation was immediately made a top priority. This is 2021. This isn't like 1976, like some of our other cases where they're like, oh, it's the five-year-old. He's probably out on the train tracks making a new life for himself.
Yeah, he's probably, like, fine.
Yeah, no, they knew that this was not great. And this is one of those cases where it really does seem like the responding police department did everything that they possibly could. Because Fruitland is such a small town, so is their police department. They only have 12 officers.
Wow.
Yeah. So Police Chief J.D. Huff immediately knew that they were in over their heads. And he wasn't afraid to ask for help, which is exactly what you want to see in a situation
absolutely.
Like this.
Good for him.
Yeah, absolutely. He immediately called in the FBI and neighboring agencies. So like Idaho State Police, you know, people like that. They all came in. And in the days and weeks following Michael's disappearance, they combed farmland, used drones, helicopters, divers, boats, like everything that they could. Because, you know, this is one of the situations where, again, they're surrounded by farmland. And they weren't necessarily thinking abduction at the time. They're thinking like, oh, he like wandered off somewhere, right?
Sure.
But when you're talking about cornfields, like that's kind of hard to search. And that's a lot of space as well. So yeah, they really absolutely. Just brought in everybody immediately because time is not on your side in that situation. But one thing they did not get and could not get was an Amber Alert. In Iowa, you basically need proof that a child has been kidnapped before an Amber Alert is issued.
Yeah, I was just going to ask if that were the case.
Yeah, it's in Iowa, like it's a state
sure.
requirement.
Yeah.
And Fruitland police simply didn't have that.
No, there's no evidence here of an abduction.
No. And you also have to like have that evidence within 12 hours of the child being missing. Like that's the other thing. And, you know, at the beginning, it was just as likely, if not more likely, that Michael had simply wandered off. But Michael's family and their supporters believe that this was a critical mistake that led to the little boy remaining missing now over 4 months later. In fact, I told you at the beginning that Brandy, the family, like everybody is making a huge push for, you know, press and for the case not to go cold right now. They're also all over social media trying to still push for an Amber Alert even now. Now, part of that is because they're trying to get more national attention on this case. And part of it is because the investigation has uncovered some new information in recent months. On October 13th, Fruitland police revealed that they had a few vehicles that they wanted help identifying. So one of the first things that they did, you know, when this whole thing started was ask all of the neighbors for any video surveillance that they had.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah. Because
I mean, the circumstances around this lead me to believe one of two possibilities, one less likely and one higher likely. The less likely one is that one of the neighbors took him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's less likely because of the close-knit community and the police response.
Mm-hmm.
Higher likelihood, like I said before, is that somebody was casing the neighborhood and wrong time, wrong place was able to snatch up Michael.
Yeah. And so people have been on the internet, of course, you've got like your armchair detectives who, of course, looked up sex offender registries and did find five or six sex offenders nearby who did live there. Two or three of them were convicted for crimes against children. And so people have definitely brought up the neighbor possibility.
And I'm sure that the police looked into that as well.
Yeah, exactly. They definitely did. Back to the video surveillance, you know, this is a neighborhood within a rural area. So there are no nearby businesses or anything that would have had security cameras. So they really had to rely on like Ring doorbell cameras and things like that from the neighbors. That was the only possibility that they had of finding footage. So anyway, so the neighbors, of course, were all very cooperative. They got the footage, they combed through it, and really just looked at every single person, every single vehicle, and just made sure that they were all accounted for. You know, like this person lives in that house, that vehicle belongs to this house. They went through and did all of that, but they were left with two vehicles that they could not identify. A white 2010 to 2016 Honda Pilot was seen on Southwest 8th Street around 6:45 p.m. on July 27th. A blue 2010 or 2011 Dodge Avenger was also seen on Southwest 8th Street before turning onto South Whitley Drive. And again, these are all the streets like right around where Michael was last seen. In addition, there were a few people whom investigators could not identify. One was the man who was jogging on the sidewalk on Southwest 8th Street near Crestview Park around 6:15. This man is described as having dark hair and facial hair. He was wearing dark shorts and no shirt. There was also a second man on Southwest 8th Street. He was wearing a white t-shirt and black shorts and also had dark hair. Now, the vehicles were caught on cameras, and I do have screenshots of those vehicles up on the blog, but it sounds like the sightings of the two men were called in by tipsters. I don't think they were actually caught on camera. Police, of course, aren't saying that any of these men or these vehicles are related to Michael's disappearance. They're just saying, like,
but it's a starting point.
Exactly. They just say, like, listen, they were in the area. We just want to know who they are. What's going on? Because, of course, they have to look into everything. In a press release, they said, quote, "It's very important to understand that these people are not suspects or persons of interest, but it is important to talk to each of them to help us complete the picture of events that took place that evening," end quote. Some people are kind of pointing to these cars as a basis of now doing an Amber Alert, because again, like, for an Amber Alert, you have to have a vehicle, and like, that's typically part of the criteria for getting one.
But there's still no evidence that those vehicles are directly connected.
Exactly. Michael was never actually seen near either of these cars or either of these men, for that matter. They were just in the area at the time that he was last seen. So I don't know if we're really going to get very far in that regard. However, I will say that while they couldn't launch an Amber Alert on July 27th, alerts did go out through Payette County's Code Red system, as well as Idaho's Missing Persons Clearinghouse. Chief J.D. Huff said in a statement, quote, "The first missing and endangered child alert went out at 8:20 p.m. with four different alerts to email, phone calls, and text messages being issued to area residents until 11:20 p.m. that night," end quote. They were working within the parameters that they had, basically. You know, if they could have gotten it, like, they tried to get an Amber Alert, and he said later, he's like, we requested one, but we couldn't get it. They tried to do what they could do. And so when they couldn't get that, they did these other alerts,
which were more locally focused.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Good on them for being proactive and doing what they can. I'm curious as to who controls the Amber Alert system. Is it
state
police?
Has to be statewide. Yeah, I don't know if it's state police or what, but like it's definitely a statewide decision. It's not something that the chief of the Fruitlands police.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
It's just...
Yeah, I don't know. And that's one of the things that Brandy is pushing for now, is to change the criteria, because the criteria is different based on states. So Oregon, which again, right over the border, there, the police just have to have a reasonable suspicion that an abduction has taken place.
Well, I'm kind of leaning in that direction here also. Like, yeah. What harm is it going to do?
Right.
Like, why do the criteria have to be so restrictive on an Amber Alert? And I know it's the whole boy who cried wolf thing,
right?
But if it's so restrictive, and we know from studying these cases that timeliness is a major factor in a missing and abducted child, do you really need to make the criteria that restrictive around children?
Yeah, no, and I do agree, especially when you have somebody that young. And it's tough, though, because you don't want people to be desensitized to these alerts, which is the fear that if you have too many, because again, 99% of kids who are reported missing are found very quickly. But you're right. But in situations like this, like, you could be wasting precious time. And when you have the technology,
why not use it?
Right. So it's tough. Like, and I understand where kind of both sides are coming from. But yeah, I would tend to err on the side of like what Oregon would say, where, you know, there's a reasonable suspicion of an abduction,
right,
as opposed to like having to actually physically see somebody getting snatched and put into a car or whatever.
Right. I mean, at this point, they had already done searches of fields.
Right. He's five. Like, he couldn't have gotten that far, you know, on his own.
Right.
Like, had he just wandered off,
yes,
like, he's not going to be 10 miles away.
Right. And the eyewitness accounts seem to point to him being out and about in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
At that time. And then you have the canine hit that tracks him to a road and then it stops.
Right, right.
I mean, that again, this is not evidence that you could take to court, but it's reasonable to assume what happened.
And of course, Brandy's like, listen, like he grew up around these like farms. He knows not to just wander off into a cornfield. This isn't his first day here, you know? So yeah, you're right. It's just, it's just a tough, tough situation. Fruitland police have said from the beginning that Michael's family has been cooperating with police, and it doesn't seem as though either of the parents has really been treated as a suspect. Of course, I mean,
I'm sure initially there were questions.
You have
asked,
to, yeah, like, but you have to assume that one or both of the parents had something to do with it. But this is just one of those cases where that does not seem to have been a primary route of investigation. So if you kind of rule that out, then the two options you're left with are stranger abduction, or that he wandered off and got lost in the farmland or a nearby canal. Police continued their extensive searches in the nearby area because statistically, Michael wandering off is a more likely scenario. They reportedly searched the cornfield by his house row by row, but found no trace of the five-year-old. By the end of September, 2 months after Michael's disappearance, the cornfields had been harvested and cleared, and there was no trace of him. This is why, at a press conference on November 19th, Chief Huff said that there was an increased probability that Michael Vaughn was abducted. And he says this basically because they've exhausted all of the other options. They have searched everywhere that he could have reasonably been and turned up absolutely nothing. They have had over 550 tips come in, most of which have been cleared, but some that they are still investigating. They're also still trying to get more information on the vehicles that I mentioned earlier and the men in the area that were seen around the time of Michael's disappearance. The Fruitland community and the Fruitland Police Department have all rallied around Michael's family. Brandy told the Idaho Press that she can barely work and that her other kids have been affected as well. She said her 2-year-old daughter, Aria, barely plays with her toys anymore, and her older daughter, Kira, said that she didn't want to have a birthday party this year. But Fruitland police still texted Kira happy birthday, and they bought Aria a gift when she turned 2, and they even came to the house and raked a big pile of leaves for Aria to jump in. Of the police, Brandy said, quote, "They truly have become family," end quote. And I wanted to make sure I mentioned that because we shit on police departments a lot on this show and they absolutely deserve it. But Chief Huff has been taking this case very personally, as has his entire team. And I do not doubt that this case is something that they think about from the moment they wake up in the morning until the moment they go to bed at night. Now that it's been over 4 months without her son and the holidays are fast approaching, Brandy wants to make sure that everyone knows Michael's story. She said at the press conference in November, quote, "He has not been home, and we need every one of you. I need you. I need your help to bring my baby home," end quote. So we want to do our part and tell Michael's story and keep his name out there. Please share this episode, share the missing posters, share anything that you see about Michael Vaughn. There are Facebook groups. There are people on Twitter posting about him constantly. And just maybe somebody out there who can help will see it. Anyone with information is urged to contact the Fruitland Police Department at 208-642-6006, extension 0, or contact the department through its tip line at findmichael@fruitland.org. A tip leading to Vaughn's safe return will be awarded with $50,100. This reward is available through March of 2022. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
Thanks for tuning into this bonus episode, and we'll see you again soon.
See you soon.
And Then There We're Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketza. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why my Lowe's Rewards members get a free paint or exterior stain sample to test your look and find the perfect color to confidently refresh your space. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid in-store only, 5/8 through 5/14. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.